Mr. Godwin, Reel 13. You were telling me about how you went aboard this with the boarding party at Loch Erenbowl in May 1945. If you'd like to continue.
Well, once we'd taken full control, all arms were taken off the submarine. Some of us went back aboard the Fitzroy. That was to form another, formed up another party, leaving so many aboard that ship, with so many, because some of them was taken off, all officers was taken off, some of the crew, there was only a skeleton German crew left aboard. They were taken aboard ship, the Fitzroy. Well, then the boarding party was for more, for any more submarines coming. We took several submarines in. But after we got so many in, because we never got them in just one after the other, they was coming in hours and days after. But when we got so many, they would be escorted down to Loch Ouse, taken to Loch Ouse in Lisher Alley, that's Northern Ireland. When we took them into the foil, the boarding parties came back. They were put back on their ships and come back. Back to Loch Erenbowl. Gather more. Well, then we ended up with a fleet of a Canadian escort group that was returning back to Canada. And they picked up a daffy of submarines. They escorted them and handed them over to the 21st Escort Group at Loch Erenbowl, because they was on their way home. That was when we got the biggest mob of submarines in one go. We never got no more for a few days. Well, I say for a few days, we never got no more after that. And I believe it was 10 we had there. Max Horton was it already at Lisher Alley. There was another ship there, but there was a Fitzroy in, I think, Fitzroy, Byron, and Conn. Escorted the remainder of the submarines to Lisher Alley. And then we received a signal from Max Horton wishing us all the best that we deliver these submarines. We got them there, went back to Belfast, and the group was disbanded.
How did you feel about that? I mean, you know.
Well, once we delivered the submarines, we went back to Belfast, and the group was disbanded. There was jollification for all the boys there, like, all wishing everyone the best of health and everything else. But there was the Fitzroy. Of course, they're now going to act as lone ships. Now, Fitzroy was going to stay in Belfast for a while because she was going to be altered to go out far east for the Japanese War. But before that happened, there was Fitzroy, I believe it was the Byron and the Conn, was sent to Norway, Bergen, for the relief of Bergen. And it was a victory parade. God dear, what a job.
What do you remember of that?
And we went out there, we went ashore, had to put gaiters on, webbing, rifles, and getting a victory parade. Don't know what for, and it was a relief of Bergen. All the victory of Bergen. But we was treated well, and then that was only on for a couple of days, and we came back, and the three of us ended up and stopped. Well, then it came to...
Now, can I ask, because there's a confusing bit in the memoir that we got, because it says You went up for April 30th, 45. You went up for promotion to able seaman and actually got promoted to leading torpedo
That's
operator.
Right.
But I thought you already were an able seaman. Can you just?
I got my upgrade and LTO at the same time.
But so you weren't an able seaman.
Not
most of the time.
With, no.
You were just an ordinary seaman most of the time on the right. Okay. And why did you got upgraded both at the same time? That's quite you did well there.
Well, that was to do with the TGM. You see, I'd already passed my seamanship. And when I was up in front of the skipper at the time, he granted, he asked a few questions in regards to seamanship. Fair enough, I answered them. And when it was granted, the TGM turned around and says, I would also like to recommend, now he's used me other rank, of able seaman Godwin, to a leading torpedo operator. And the skipper turned around and says, well, that's unusual. I said, why? He said, well, normally, he said, usually, a leading seaman becomes a leading torpedo operator. So the TGM says, not necessary. He can be an ordinary seaman, but still be a leading torpedo operator. He said, whereby he fires the gun, the tube, or guns as we call them. And I was granted it right away. No argument. That gave me 6 months a day extra.
And that's when that happened. We got it a bit wrong before.
Yeah, it should have come in beforehand.
No problem. Now, you weren't with the ship long in Belfast before you were taken off, were you?
No.
When did you leave the ship?
I left the ship in the December.
So what were you doing between June and December? Just ship's routine in harbour?
Because we went to Bergen, we were Norway, and basically we was aboard ship and we was going to stay there to have the alterations done to go far east.
And then that would be cancelled in August.
And all of a sudden they cancelled this. We were still working part of the ship, going ashore, basically doing nothing. We did manage to get a leave in that time, a 7 days leave each. And the skeleton crew that was left aboard took the ship back to the States.
Now, what happened to you then? You left the ship in December 45.
And I went into barracks.
At Victory? Victory, yeah. Barrack.
Well, no, I went to Stockheath, Bedhampton. And from there, short arm inspection, discharge.
Now, why were you discharged?
A deafness.
Can you tell us, I mean, who discovered that?
Well, when you go for your short arm inspection, it's a medical to go into barracks, anything wrong with your ears, I said, yes, deaf in one. Stand to one side. I was sent down to Aslan, that's the Naval Hospital, Gosport. He's tested, unfit for service. And I discharged me.
Now, that's a bit confusing, because you've got your discharge date as the 29th of October.
That's right.
But you didn't leave the ship till December.
I hadn't left the ship. Not when that was first discovered.
Right. So when were you actually discharged in January
46? I actually discharged to come home on the 14th of December. And the official papers come through, because as I say, I had leave in that time, but up to the 14th of December. The official time of coming out was in January 46, I was completely finished with the Navy.
Now, what were you to do when you carried? We'd just like to sort of ask you how you got back into civilian life. We don't follow it right through, but, you were coming out of the Navy. What were you going to do? Because, it seems like you're a bit confused as to what you were going to do before.
Say that again. Well, I went back to the factory that I was working in before.
Now, that's the plywood factory.
Plywood factory.
Now, how did you fit in there?
I went back there, what, a fortnight after I come out, sometime in February in 1946. And when I saw what was going on, I put up with it for a little while.
Now, what was going on? Why did you have trouble?
Well, it was entirely different.
In what way?
People in charge, like, some of the people I still knew. But the people who was in charge was entirely different because they altered the situation of what they was doing. And I was and I was doing work in there, night work and all, and it was jobs that wasn't worth doing. And I thought to myself, well, I've got to get out of this. This is not what I want. They tried to make me a foreman. I said, no, thanks. They can stick.
Now, were you... I mean, I understand that things have changed there. You know, they've changed.
But I've changed.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. How were you settling down back to civilian life after all this time at sea? And
I settled down well. You've got to remember. I had a wife, and my son was born on the 20th of January, my first son. And lo and behold, we were quite happy.
So what, you didn't have any problem getting back to civilian life. So what had changed about you that made this job no longer any good? As them changing?
I didn't have responsibility there. You know, in a situation where...
You wanted it now, though. You wanted responsibility.
I wanted responsibility. And when they found out I was packing up, they offered me a foreman's job. I said, no, thanks. Lick and stick.
What do you mean by that?
Lick me stamps and stick them on my card.
So what did you... What were you to do then?
Well, I don't think I went to work for another month after that. But my mother-in-law had a couple of lodgers. And they... One of them was a carpenter. One of them, he was a foreman with the same firm. And they were doing bomb damage. So this carpenter turned around and says to me, because we got very friendly, he said to me, here, Patty, he says, how about you doing decorating? Come off here, I says, no. He says, you know, with this bomb damage, you can earn a bloody fortune. So, yeah. I said, I don't know how to do decorating. I said, I'll learn in time. He said, look, become a painter. And this bloke who was there was a foreman. He says, well, I'm foreman down here. I'll get you a job as a painter and decorator. I said, you're joking. So my missus is pushing me on this now, isn't she? Go on, give it a try. So I said, well, what do I need? So this foreman turned around and says, I'll fetch you the gear that you want to wear. I'll fetch it on. He brought me home a white jacket, like a cloth jacket, and a white carpenter's apron. And this carpenter says to me, he says, now, all you need to do is go and buy yourself an hacking knife, a putty knife, a dusting brush, and a distemper brush. He said, you want them? I said, where do I put them? So the father-in-law turned around and says, I'll make a toolbox for you. Well, the father-in-law made this toolbox up, but he never made it big enough for this 9-inch brush to go in, like the distemper brush. So... They all threw a bit of rubbish in, so he cut a slot out, so the distemper brush slid in the lid, and there was a clip to hold it down, but the handle stuck out, so that was a box. They painted it, they sprayed it, they put paint distemper on it, and they really made it look as though it had been in a room with decoration going on. They threw bits and pieces inside, and old screws and Christ knows what. Then I goes for this job. I got the job. This foreman made sure I got it. The first morning I was there, they put me to bloke. It must have been 90 if he was a day. He had his trilby on, glasses as thick as buttons of James Jones. He had all the white gear on. And he says to me about doing the ceiling. So out comes my brush. Well, brand spanking new, it's never been used, never even been in water about distemper. Because that was distemper then. Do this scene. So I'm up on the platform, splashing away, and I'm taking it one way. All I'm doing is this. He's doing this. And he's flapping it all. I've got lines on mine here. I go the other way. And it, when we finished this scene, we got down, he looked at me, he says, "You're not a decorator, are you?" I said, "I'm going to be honest with you, mate. No, I've just come out of bloody Navy." "That's all right," he says. "I won't say nothing. I'll teach you." And he taught me quite a lot, that man. And I was really listening to him. He says, "I'll teach you how to do it." And he taught me how to do it. So told me everything, how to decorate, paint a door, the lot. How to do windows and everything. He said, "Now, if my wife can do it, you can." He said, "But you're not going to do it the same as my wife, does it? Because, as you know, little windows." I said, "Well, how does your wife do it?" "She puts sticky tape down all round the window, puts it all over all of them. She just gets a brush and goes through it," she said, "and just pulls the tape off." He said, "But you can't do that. You've got to cut in." And he gave me an old brush. I had to cut in. I got on well.
So that was, did you stay in painting and decorating?
Yeah.
That was your career?
No. No. Because in late 46, because I was even working with different firms as a painter and decorator, even the Barking Council, Barking and Decorum Council, or Barking Council then. And it was while I was with them, was one night I coughed up blood. This was, I'm going now, August, September time in 46. And my boy was only a youngster, very young. And I went and saw my doctor the next day. I was sent for X-ray and Christ knows what. And it turned out I had TB. Well, I went in hospital late 47. Let me get this right. No, I went in hospital about March 1947 in Broomfield Hospital at Chelmsford. Of course, that was a sanatorium then. And I went there, and I came out of there I was due to come out just before Christmas, 47. But it meant me going back there every week for treatment. So they says, "Well, don't bother to come back. We'll discharge you. And you will have your treatment in Ilford, in Cranbrook Rose." Oh, that's nice. So I officially got discharged just before the Christmas. And that was my boy's first Christmas. Well, then, through that, I wasn't allowed to go work for so long. I had to wait until they could give me permission to go to work. Well, I did eventually told I can take a temporary job, and I worked at Sherwood's as a stacker, stacking paint for the lorries to take out, or stacking paint on a beige for lorries to take
out.
You
couldn't work as a painter and decorator anymore then?
No.
Why not? Because of the paint fumes?
Because of the fumes and all that. Well, through the movements and all that. I wasn't to do a lot of movement with my right arm, because of the right lung.
But wouldn't stacking mean moving your right arm a lot?
No, not so much as all that. It was just taking tins off of a shelf, putting them on a barrow, and just moving them down to the loading bay. And then I was registered. I was registered disabled. Therefore, I went on an electrical training course. I went to Leatherhead, the Queen Elizabeth College for Disabled, a training establishment, and I passed that as an electrician. And I stayed in there and I owned my own business in electrical contracting. And so I retired at that.
Now, what about, the last thing we'd like to ask is about your contacts with fellow crew members and with the Captain's Class Association. Because that's only recent, the last 3 or 4 years, I suppose. Did you keep in touch with the old boys from the Fitzroy?
Never. I only contacted them since I've retired.
So tell me about the Captain's Class Association. Why did you join it? What's important about it for you?
Well, they're all men who were boys, and they've all grown to like each other. And we meet every year through reunion with our American counterparts who was on DEs, which is equivalent to the Captain Class frigates. But they kept their name DE because they had torpedo tubes and that. And we all meet up every April.
And have you met any old boys from the Fitzroy at that?
No. I'm the only one of the Fitzroy that goes. But this coming one, I'm hoping to have two there. One of them is now a canon in the Catholic religion, and the other one is a skipper that commissioned the ship, Commander Miller. I spoke to him the other night.
And is it important to you, that meeting all these? It sounds like, you know...
Oh, it's great fun. It's great fun. Because we've all... The same stories come out every year, but a different way round. If you sunk a sub, you sunk a battleship. And if you sunk a battleship, you sunk an aircraft carrier. That is the fun we have.
Thank you very much.